Please be seated.
Yes, Ms. Hedge.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner, I intend to outline now the issue that has been described as sperm microscopy. I start with an understanding of the workflow that existed in the laboratory for sperm samples. From about 2010, suspected sperm samples were processed by the laboratory using what was called the suspension method. The sperm swab or material was scraped or cut up into a tube with distilled water. A microscope slide was prepared, where some drops of that solution were dropped onto the slide. The scientists then looked at the slide under the microscope to identify whether and what density of sperm was in the sample. Presumptive tests were also performed on part of that solution. If the presumptive tests were positive or the microscope slide had sperms in on it, then part of the solution would be processed through quantitation, amplification, and capillary electrophoresis. Sometimes before that process, the solution would undergo differential lysis, a process to separate the sperm cells from other cells, such as skin or tissue cells. Often suspected sperm samples are taken in relation to sexual assaults, and so the swabs may contain a large amount of the complainant's cells and DNA compared to a small amount of sperm. Differential lysis allows the sperm and the DNA it contains to be detected more readily by separating it from other sorts of DNA. If differential lysis is performed, another slide is created after that process, known as the differential lysis slide, which should make it easier to see the sperm once the other cells are removed. However, in some circumstances, if the presumptive tests were negative and the first slide created, often called the ER slide or the evidence recovery slide, did not show any sperm, then the sample would not be processed further at all. Toward the end of 2015, a reporting scientist noticed in a particular case that there was a discrepancy. She had obtained a strong male DNA profile from a sample, but the slide that was created had not shown any sperm. Could I have on the screen FSS.0001.0067.6316? Can we scroll down? Is there a second page of that document? Thank you. Just looking at that email there that we see spans the first and the second page. Just a little further up, please, operator. Thank you. This is an email sent from Jacqueline Wilson, who's one of the reporting scientists at the laboratory, on the 4th of March 2016. And you'll see that she is writing to her supervisor or line manager, Amanda Reeves, and to Amanda's line manager, Justin Howes, all part of the reporting team. Ms. Wilson says, here's another example of where the initial slide assessment has differed greatly from the DLYS slide, that is the diff lysis slide. Initial screening was zero sperm seen. However, upon examination of the diff lysis slide, it was 3+. Now, these numbers are not exact quantitations. That is, it's not zero sperm and then 3+ sperm. That's a semi-quantitative scale. So zero means none. 3+ is very easy to find, but it would be more than literally the number.
So it's a rule of thumb method of signifying the amount of sperm from zero to plus one to plus two, plus three, but they don't signify one sperm head, two sperm heads, or three sperm heads. They signify general quantities.
That's right. From how easy they are to find when you look through the slide.
Yes.
Through the microscope at the slide. So Ms. Wilson says, here's another example. Ms. Wilson cannot now remember what that previous example was or when. Mr. Matthew Hunt, another reporting scientist in the reporting team at the laboratory, remembers this issue being raised in late 2015. Ms. Wilson posits a potential issue in the third paragraph there. I personally think we have an issue with the preparation of the slide itself, not in the reading of the slides. Janine phoned me to tell me about the 3+ and indicated she had gone back to the original slide and still could not find sperm. So in my opinion, there's something wrong there. She suggests a bit of an investigation or some mocked-up samples to look at the slide preparation issue. We then turn back to the top of the page, top of the first page. And Commissioner, Ms. Reeves handed or passed on this email, forwarded it to Mr. Howes and said that, could we just also redact that number in the subject line, please, operator? I'm sorry. Thank you. And said that in her view also a further investigation was warranted, perhaps looking at how the smear was prepared. The smear is another word for the slide. With the view to widening the investigation for more systemic issues observed. So this was the start of the raising of this concern within the laboratory. Can we turn then to FSS.0001.0067.6318? I say, Commissioner, I'll tender a number of documents using an index at the end of the opening rather than as we go through.
Yes, do you want to? Do you want to then, in due course, tender them as a bundle of some kind?
Yes.
All right.
This is the, we can see it at the bottom of the page. This is the same email that we looked at on the last page. And then at the top of the page is Mr. Howes's response, again on the same day, 4th of March 2016. And he thanks Ms. Wilson for raising the concern. And he said, good work, and we will follow things up from here. In fact, from there, there was a delay of approximately 2 months before further particular action was taken. I say that because no doubt there were some discussions, but there was a delay while Mr. McNevin was on leave. When he returned, he was tasked.
What we're dealing with here is that in the first instance, a sample that has been received where what is being looked for, if it's there, is DNA in the form of sperm heads, that sample is treated so that if there are any sperm heads, they'll be, or some of them will be transferred to a microscope slide. So the sample can be viewed through a microscope in the first instance to see if there are sperm there. And so the sample would be worth processing further. But if you don't see any sperm heads, then it's not worth processing further. And that's the end of it in general.
It's not as black and white as that in the workflows that existed pre-2016, and I say that because there was the presumptive testing. So if there was no sperm seen but positive presumptive tests, that was often moved on to processing. And there was also some ability at least for scientists to exercise a discretion if no sperm was seen and there was negative presumptive tests still to proceed. So the first slide wasn't the end of it. Because if it had been, then Ms. Wilson would never have found that example.
Yes.
Because that had obviously gone on through the process despite being zero on the evidence recovery slide. But in many cases, if there's no sperm seen on the slide, presumptive tests negative, in many, or I say in most cases, that would have been the end of the testing.
So in summary, the examination of a microscope slide is part of the procedure to determine if it's worth proceeding with or not. But there is the presumptive test, which would indicate the possible presence of sperm. And if so, in general, that sample would go ahead whether the microscope slide showed anything or not. Secondly, if something showed up on the microscope slide, it would go forward. And thirdly, there are other cases in which, notwithstanding nothing on the slide, the sample might go forward. But there was a class of samples which, if they showed nothing on the slide, they would not progress further.
Right.
And what Ms. Wilson was identifying was that one of these, when progressed further, one of these that might have been risked not going further, did in fact go further for some reason to do with the work process. And it showed at a subsequent step that there was sperm. And then when they went back to the slide, indeed, there were no sperm. So there was a problem of some kind in the preparation of the slide or the extraction or something leading up to that slide being examined. So there was a potential for a range of samples to be missed.
That's right. Mm. It was the view of Ms. Wilson and Ms. Reeves that there must be some problem at that point in the process.
Mm.
Others have a different view. For example, Mr. McNevin expresses the view in his statement that because the evidence recovery slide has many cells on it, including sperm cells, assuming sperm's present, and whereas the diff lysis slide would only have the sperm cells, then it would be expected that there'd be cases in which they wouldn't be seen on one but seen on the other. But the exact cause of it, as we'll come to, has never been identified by the laboratory, the exact cause of that discrepancy. And the key feature, as you said, Mr. Commissioner, is that some things could be missed, and that the missing of a sample like that is missing of sperm, and meaning that there's no further testing of the sample, might have a very significant impact on a particular case. It may not as well, in the sense that, as you know, a sexual assault investigation kit has a number of swabs. Perhaps this problem or concern might arise in relation to one swab, but sperm would be seen on some other swab. And so the evidential matrix that goes to a court would be similar. But on the other hand, if that concern or problem arose in relation to a particular swab that had a particular probative impact at the trial, then that might... not testing it and not finding that sperm could be very significant in a particular criminal case.
Mm. Mm.
And so the consequences of even one swab not being fully tested could be very significant for one case, which is reflected in, as time goes on, some people within the laboratory are very concerned about this issue, very concerned that it be quickly and promptly dealt with.
Mm. All right.
So March is the first time that there is a written record, but as I say, Ms. Wilson identifies that it's not the first time that she's seen it. And one of the particular issues that the Commission will be considering in the evidence today is the length of time over which this issue was investigated and the reasons for that, and in particular this first period between when the issue was first identified to managers and when real steps were taken to investigate it. Because that's one of the issues that I will confront you, that a little of the history needs to be set out in this opening. So can we turn then to FSS.0001.0066.8701? So we come now to the 6th of May, so it's about 2 months after that last email. And Mr. Howes wrote to Ms. Wilson and Ms. Reeves following up on this issue. He says he had a meeting planned with Kirsten, that would be Dr. Kirsten Scott, the quality manager within the laboratory. And then he indicates there that Al appreciates the issue raised and we will look into how to handle them. He had some lengthy absence since I passed it on to ERQ, that would be evidence recovery and quality team, previously, and should be in a better position now to investigate further. I will keep you informed of the outcomes.
But they did nothing It seemed, is that what you're saying? They did nothing between the 4th of March and the 6th of May?
At least no concrete steps towards an investigation. There may have been discussions or something of that nature, and that appears to be the case. Mr. House.
But what I mean is they did nothing to prevent slides being samples containing sperm, but that showed no sperm in microscopy being missed?
That's right. No change to the workflow and no particular investigation into how the particular case.
But more importantly, no steps to ensure that samples weren't missed.
Yes, that's right. That's right. And later, as we'll come to, there was a change in the workflow to do that, and that was not done until August. So that's right. Between April and May, I'm sorry, March and May, there was no step taken to test all samples or take any other step to make sure
and
that.
What? Nothing till August.
That's right. 8th of August 2016 was the first change to the workflow. This issue was then discussed after this email on the 12th of May and the 27th of May. And at the second of those meetings, the outcome from the meeting was that Alan McNevin would initiate a project plan for the next step. So we can see effectively another month has passed to the end of May. Could we turn then to FSS.0001.0013.2386? This is the initial request for what became Project 181. You can see that it was proposed by Mr. McNevin on the 2nd of June 2016. The title was Investigation into Sensitivity of Spermatozoa Microscopy. Could we zoom in, please, Mr. Operator, on the text in the middle box? Thank you. The first paragraph identifies the concerns that's been raised. And two particular concerns are raised about the sensitivity of the original slide microscopy: the suspension method resulting in overly diluted material, or a potential problem associated with the slide staining procedure. The project was said at the bottom of this part to investigate part one, as there is no current in-house experimental data comparing the sensitivity of sperm microscopy, AP and P30 detection and DNA profiling. AP and P30 detection are the two presumptive tests that were in place. And there's an indication of how they will be carried out, how the project will be carried out according to this proposal. That proposal was signed off by Dr. Scott. On 9 June, so about 7 days after this document, the matter was discussed at a management meeting. This was the meeting at which Mr. McNevin banged his hands on the table. He later apologised for raising his voice and for, in his words, spitting the dummy. Can we put up the apology email which Mr. McNevin sent? It's FSS.0001.0066.8657. I'm sorry, that's not the right number. Could we take that document down? Sorry, one moment. Sorry, I'll come back to that in Mr. McNevin's evidence, but in the email, Mr. McNevin, very shortly after the meeting, apologises for his behaviour in the meeting and describes it as upset. The relevance of that meeting to the Commission, my submission to you, and what occurred there is only insofar as it relates to the continuation of the project, the delays that were experienced, and the depression or hesitancy that remained amongst other staff about raising scientific issues because of what occurred at that meeting. We turn then to FSS.0001.0066.8676. This is an email on the 19th of July 2016. So it's about 5 or 6 weeks after that meeting. Ms. Rika wrote to her reporting team, as we can see there on the 19th of July, attaching that document, that initial request, number 181, which was signed. She CC'd Ms. Reeves, who was the other reporting team senior scientist at that time, and Mr. Howes. She said to her team that a few people had asked about where we were at with the micro slides issue. And she identified that initial request to them. Investigations are still progressing, but in the meantime, she suggested to her team, checking your DIF lysa slide in any situation where the ER slide and your DNA results don't quite tell the same story. Now, of course, while that is prudent advice, that doesn't deal with the issue of a case which doesn't progress at all past the ER slide, because there would be no DIF lysa slide or DNA result in a case which didn't progress past that initial slide. Just one moment, I just need to check the next document. All right, could we have on the screen FSS.0001.0067.6328? See down the bottom of the page that there is Ms. Rika's email that we just looked at. And at the top of the page, Ms. Reeves forwarded that up to Mr. Howes, forwarded to Mr. Howes again to say that she was particularly concerned. She said in her second sentence, "We really need this sorted ASAP. And I can't understand why there is not more urgency around this. It is freaking me out." I dare not say anything else, though. This is how I got yelled at last time. In the last line, importantly, she says, "Given the high risk, I am asking if it can be made a priority, please." So it's raised again by Ms. Reeves. Then can we turn to FSS.0001.0052.8289? Mr. McNevin, on the 20th of July, only one day after that, was providing a copy of the project plan proposal, so a more in-depth description than the initial request, and he sent it to Ms. Brasotto, who would have been his line manager at that time. He was the senior scientist in charge of evidence recovery. And can we look at that document? It is FSS.0001.0013.2174. This is the project plan prepared by Mr. McNevin. Could we zoom in on that, the text that's in the box? Thank you. The concern, again, is repeated of the staff who raised it. You can see there, Commissioner, the semi-quantitative scale that I described, 0, 0 seen, less than 1 plus, less than 10 cells seen on the whole slide, very hard to find. 1 plus means hard to find, 2 plus means easy to find, 3 plus means very easy to find, 4 plus abundant. And so as we...
Do the documents we've seen explain why there was no sense of urgency in ensuring that no samples in sexual offence cases were being missed?
No. Then at the bottom of the page, we have the concerns. Again, this is the same concerns that were in the initial request form. Could we turn then to page 2 of that document, please, operator? And again, there's an indication that item 1 will be looked at by in-house experimental data, and there's a description of what will be done. Now, it's clear that the focus on AP and P30, that is the presumptive tests, are not directly relevant to whether the slide making procedure was correct or had some concern with it. There are different tests done. In the benefits, Mr. McNevin has stated that because there was no formal validation of the making of cell suspensions that might have started about 2008, an investigation into the effectiveness of current procedures will fill the gap in departmental records. And additionally, the determination of the sensitivity of microscopy and presumptive testing compared to the profiling results is worth investigating. So it's clear from this stage that Project 181 intends to look at a much wider range of things than only the sperm microscopy issue that's been identified, which is the slide baking procedure. Can we turn then to FSS.0001.0079.5361? Could we start at the bottom of the page, please? This is an email from, sorry, 1 minute. This is an email from Mr. Papia to Mr. Howes, Ms. Reeves, and Ms. Rika. Mr. Papia is a reporting scientist at the laboratory, and he says he thought he'd pass this on. A sample tested for presence of semen, micro-negative, that's the microscopy, greater than 1 plus epithelial cells, PSA positive. I understand that's one of the presumptive tests.
So the microscope showed nothing, but there had been a positive presumptive test.
Yes. So it went on. And then SFRAC is the sperm fraction. And when the sperm fraction was processed for a DNA profile, it returned a strong single source male profile with peaks around 1200 RFU. That's the peaks on the electrophorogram. Then on the DIF slide, the DIF lysis slide, there were 3 plus sperm heads. Using that semi-quantitative scale we've discussed, and less than 1 plus epithelial cells. So again, there's that discrepancy between what was on the microscope slide at evidence recovery and at differential lysis. At top of the page, could we just redact that sample number in top email, please, operator? Thank you. Mr. Howes thanked Adrian and asked for a sample number, which he provided. We then turn to WIT.0002.0106.0001. with you. We started with the bottom email, please, operator. Thank you. This is an email the day after Mr. Papia's email. Ms. Rika wrote to Mr. Howes and Ms. Reeves. She said she'd had a conversation with Paula Brasotto about a plan for sorting out the micro slides issue. She'd been thinking about it. She suggested that the reporting team did its own project. She suggested some people who might be particularly appropriate to perform that project, ER experienced people, and she identified the type of project that they would formulate a project or proposal plan and carry out experiments and testing in the ER lab. And as she says there, Allen / evidence recovery could still do what they feel is necessary in terms of sensitivity study, et cetera, if they wanted to. And Commissioner, you might remember her evidence last week was that while she considered the particular tasks or investigations that Mr. McNevin was carrying out were interesting, they weren't a direct answer to the issue. And so that is the motivation then for writing this email, to try and have things moving on the particular issue that had been raised rather than the more general question of whether microscope slides were being produced or whether the workflow was optimised. Could we go down to page 2, please, operator? She said that the project plan would likely deal with some issues below. Now, let's look at right down to the bottom of the page, if that's that bottom email. Thank you. On the 12th of May, there had been an email from Mr. Howes. We're just going back a little in time here. From Mr. Howes to Ms. McNevin and Ms. Scott suggesting some investigations that could be done with some suggestions from reporting staff. And can we just look through those? They're in the italicised font there. Firstly, identify a staining or fixing issue. And there's suggestions of how, what should be looked into in terms of how the slide was created. And if we turn onto the next page, is that the last page?
Yes.
All right. Thank you. There are some other suggestions which I will have to come back to. But at the top of, can we go to the top of page 2 now? This is the end of Ms. Rika's email. She said, obviously, at this stage, she hasn't spoken to anyone else. And it would be for Ms. Reeves and Ms. Howes to agree, as the people she nominated were outside of her team. All right, can we go back to the top of the first page, please? Right, Ms. Reeves then writes to Ms. Rika and Mr. Howes, again, emphasising what she considers to be the urgency of it. She says over 6 months have passed, been ignored, and there's still no outcome. We're still exposed in terms of risk, as Adrian's most recent example has illustrated. She says she is going to step away and let Justin decide if her staff are required or not. So that's the 28th of July, keeping in mind that the issue was raised, it appears, from Mr. Hunt's evidence sometime at the end of 2015. Can we turn then, we come now to that point that we was mentioned earlier, Commissioner, about a workaround. Can we turn to FSS.0001.0051.5190?
So 5 months have passed and not a step has actually been taken to even to obviate the risk, let alone find out why this has been happening. So nothing's changed.
That's right, at this stage. So we come to the 8th of August, 2016, and could we zoom in on the top half, perhaps, of that page? Thank you. This is an email from Mr. McNevin to his team, that is the evidence recovery team. And he says in his first sentence, due to concerns and identified potential risks associated with the possibility of missing semen with current ER processes, we are making a minor change to processes effective immediately. So at this stage, it's clear that this is in response to the risk that we've discussed. Please note that this change in process is being done to mitigate the above risk, as well as buy us time to further investigate the current process and develop slash test potential process improvements. Please also note that this has arisen not because of concerns around your ability to follow correct procedure or identify spermatozoa or any similar problem, but rather that the process that was put in place at a time when verification slash validations were new to the department and that we were not fully cognizant of the limitations or risks associated with the said process.
What does that mean?
As I understand it, the process for doing validations and verifications has become more and more rigorous over time, and particularly within forensic DNA. So the validations being done now are a much more rigorous thing than would have been done in 2008. In fact, Mr. McNevin says he cannot find a validation of the process when introduced in 2008.
He cannot find what?
A validation done at the time of introducing that new process of suspension method.
I see.
And that may not be, the commission has not investigated whether that was out of the ordinary for 2008, but he's identified that in 2016 as something that was different than what he would have done if he was introducing process in 2016.
Is the evidence going to show that the lab has worked out for how long there was a process in place under which samples might have been missed?
That is known because it's the time between when the process was introduced in about 2008 and when the workaround was introduced in August 2016. So that time period is known, but what samples there were that were not processed because of a lack of sperm on the ER side.
They never went back to find out.
That's right.
What has been missed? So whatever has been missed has now been missed, and they've never looked to find out whether they missed any and how many.
That's right.
Is that right?
That is right. But what they did do was do a piece of data analysis between August 2016 and about March 2017, and I can confirm that time period when I come to the document. They did a piece of data analysis of samples in that period, so after the workaround, where they said, let's look at the ones that would have been missed under the previous. They had about 730 samples in that data analysis.
Yes.
And they looked at how many of them would have changed the case.
I see. Oh, well, you come to that.
And that was a relatively small number would have changed the case. And so that... it's likely to have fed into the decision not to go back. But just to round out that, and I will deal with it in greater detail, but just to round out that topic of going back and finding samples, Mr. Clint Cochrane, who's been an expert witness who's been engaged by the commission to consider this issue,
yes,
identifies that is something that could be done now. And he sets out a number of criteria under which the laboratory might decide which of those samples which were missed in the past should now be retested, because of course some of them might relate to cases that have been resolved either by plea of guilty or conviction, and some of them or acquittal, I should say, resolved in any way. And some of them may also be only one swab of a group of swabs, others of which came up positive for spermatozoa. So he says that it would be possible for the laboratory now to go back and look for things that were missed and identify particular cases. And that, of course, is whether that should be done or not is a policy consideration that balances a number of features. But he says that at least it could be identified how many of them there are by applying certain criteria, and then that policy decision balancing resources could be undertaken. Whereas at this stage, as far as the commission knows, it's not known what was missed to know how to balance that decision. Right.
So just remind me, what they did was for the period during which from when the workaround started in August 2016 until the date they performed this analysis was how long?
When they did the data analysis?
Yes.
Approximately 9 to 12 months. I'll just confirm that. So the data analysis covered the period 8th of August 2016 to 28th of March 2017. But you were looking for when, and that was reported in a draft paper in May 2017. So about,
so it's about 8 months study that they did.
That's right.
And they had about 700 samples for 8 months.
That's right. Perhaps I can tell you the details of that now rather than coming back to it later. So could I have on the screen exp.0004.0001.0009? This is the expert report of Mr. Cochrane. Could we zoom in on paragraph 47 and 48 at the bottom of the page there? Thank you. So this is the review, 738 samples tested between those dates, where sperm was not identified on the ER slide and a differential extraction slide was made. Of the 738, 591 did not have sperm on the differential slide either, and 147 subsequently identified sperm on the differential slide. Then they looked at those 147. And as you see there, 48A, 71 would have been tested by differential extraction anyway because of presumptive testing results, sample type or other results. And if we can turn then to the next page and zoom in, thank you. 47 samples would have progressed through DNA testing using the routine cells protocol. It's less effective.
So just pausing there.
Yes.
Of those 700, 29 would not have progressed. All the rest would have been rightly eliminated or would have progressed. Is that how I read it?
In some way, that's right. Those 47 there wouldn't have progressed through differential lysis, but would have progressed through a different protocol, but would have progressed in some way. That's right.
So
29 would not have been tested. The DNA based
right.
on the previous workflow.
Mm-hmm.
And then of those 29, you see there that 28 would not have recovered new evidential DNA profiles because of other SAKE results in the case. Now, could I just indicate, we'll deal with all of it, and one would have recovered DNA test evidence that would not have been tested. So that one of the 738 would have found sperm, which was not found anywhere else in the SAKE, is the point. That suggests.
Well, just leaving aside what happened here, about 28 samples would not have been tested, so we wouldn't know what they contained. Is that right?
That's right.
And so that's about 30 samples. In the period, which is 6 months, so about 60 samples per year would not have been tested over 8 years. So that's about 500 samples that went through to the keeper over that period, between 400 and 500 samples.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure of that mathematics.
Well, the data it's 30 samples. It's in 6 months, so it's six.
I think it's out. Yeah. It's about. Oh, yes, I suppose it is. I think it's about 7 or 8 months, start of August to the end of March of the next year. Is that 8 months?
August to September, December, November, August, September, October, November, December, January, February, and it's the beginning of March, so it's 6 months.
I don't mean to be argumentative.
No.
It's the 28th of March. So that's.
Oh, did you say the 28th of March? All right,
yes.
So it's 7 months. Right.
So August, September, October, November, December, January, February, March. I've got eight.
All right, eight.
So if it's eight,
yeah.
So 30 in 8 months,
yeah.
And 8 months is two-thirds of 12 months.
So well, it's 8 years.
That's right. So perhaps 40 or to 50, say. Let's
so
just
about
say
12.
Per year
so it's about 12 periods of 8 months. All right. So about 400 have been missed.
Yes,
go on.
And we see in C, and moving on to paragraph 49, that Mr. Cochrane, and this is the way that the Queensland Laboratory saw it too, that those 28 that would not have recovered new evidential DNA profiles, they sort of put them to one side as not being a significant effect.
Oh, but that's because there are other results in those cases.
That's right. But all I wish to add was that, of course, in the criminal justice system, sometimes one result is the one that matters.
Mm.
That is, if the victim or the complainant says that sperm was deposited in a particular place, you know, perhaps on a hand or
on the
back, then it's that one that matters for credit.
Yeah.
So having other sperm somewhere else in the sake may not be
Full
answer to the case. So I just wish to add that caveat as well, that may not occur to scientists, but is something that, as a criminal lawyer, and Commissioner, you'd be aware of.
Well,
sometimes it's the one that matters.
Anyway, what we know is about that many samples would not have been tested, and the implications of that are unknown.
That's right. Yeah. And that mathematical exercise we have done proceeds on the basis that the workflow was pretty consistent through that period from 2008 to 2016. Now, there's no evidence that it changed, but, of course, there can be minor changes from staff doing things in slightly different ways. And it also assumes that in all of those periods, there's the same number of SAPEs coming in as in that period in 2016, 2017. So there's a few assumptions under there, but it's clear that there's a large number of samples. It's not just four or five over that period that could be now looked at. All right, so that's the data analysis. So could we go back to that email on the 8th of August 2016 that started that workaround, fss.0001.0051.5190? We had looked at the top of that email, and then could we look at the part under the heading, the change? Thank you. So it's indicated that the change is around examination for semen/spermatozoa. Samples that are micronegative for sperm and AP negative are to be submitted for differential lysis. Samples that are micronegative for sperm and AP positive, P30 negative, are to be submitted for differential lysis. So the effect of that is that everything goes to differential lysis. And the additional process change is that the diff lysis slide will be red. And then there's some discussion about what exhibit lines might be used. So that's the workaround and described by Ms. Rika as a safety net to catch the cases that might come through. To this point, at least 7 months had passed since the issue was first identified, more likely 8 months or longer. This change to the process resolved the issue moving forward because all samples would be subject to differential lysis and both slides reviewed, no matter the result of the initial slide assessment and the presumptive tests. However, there were some aspects that remained outstanding at this point. One is why did the issue arise in the first place? And the second is what to do about samples that had been analysed before the process changed and we've just dealt with.
So the data analysis. What happened in August was that this idea was raised that we're missing things on the microscope, so let's send everything through to the differential lysis process. Is that right?
That's right.
All of these relevant samples, let's send it straight through to the differential lysis process because that's the process which we know is picking up sperm when there is sperm.
At least to the greatest degree, that's right.
Yeah, yes, yes.
Nothing's perfect, but...
Yeah, yes, yes. So is there any evidence that we've seen as to why this idea didn't occur to anybody when Ms. Reeves first raised the problem at the end of 2015?
No.
All right.
Right.
Because it sounds like a plain and logical idea, not requiring a project to work through. And in the end, it was just a plain and logical idea that Mr. McNevin put forward. But nobody thought of it 8 months before.
Well, no one implemented it, and there's no evidence of discussion about it or proposal of it.
Or even of the need to think of something like that.
That's right. And this didn't come out of the project per se.
No, I understand that. No, that's what I mean. Stage.
That's right.
You can have your project, but this was an idea that had nothing to do with experiments and statistical analysis. This was just a notion that, well, if method A doesn't work and we found that method B is working in picking up these things, let's just go straight through to method B. It just baffles me why that proposition didn't occur to anybody when at around the time that the issue was first raised by Ms. Wilson and Ms. Reeves.
Yes.
But we don't know why.
And they did continue to do the evidence recovery slide, but they just did both slides for every case.
After August. Right. But before that, they just, for 8 months, they continued.
They just continued.
With the process that was leading to error.
That's right. On the 16th.
Doesn't sound very scientific.
Well, it's something we can take up with Mr. McNevin and Mr. House. They were the ones in charge of that decision. And Ms. Prasotto. So on the 16th of August, the project proposal was circulated and there was feedback from management committee members. In October of 2016, there were steps taken by the executive director, Paul Shobin, to engage Livingstone's Australia to investigate concerns about the laboratory. Some of those concerns or investigation topics related to Ms. Reeves and Mr. McNevin and their personal interaction, which is of less concern to the Commission than the more general investigation into the poor working relationship between the substantive team members of the management team. So while the project continues, there's also this culture/human resources type investigation occurring, which you've heard evidence from some of the scientists that, for example, you might remember Ms. Keller, Angelina Keller, indicated that when she had her interview with Livingstone's, they just asked her about Mr. McNevin and Ms. Reeves and who she preferred working with and their working styles and so on. So this becomes part of the story of this project, that there's a another investigation about culture occurring at the same time. Mr. McNevin says in his statement that the culture of the laboratory generally did decrease or become worse in this period, 2016-2017, and that in his view that had an impact on the speed with which this project continued. In November 2016, Ms. Reeves went on leave from the laboratory, and around this time there were some workplace related meetings about Ms. Reeves and about her role in the laboratory which are not relevant to the Commission and we don't intend to go into in depth or at all. Can we turn then to a different aspect of this? Part of the interaction with Ms. Reeves was that Ms. Reeves maintained concerns about the process and looking backwards at previous samples, passed the workaround. So while some were satisfied with the workaround, Ms. Reeker was satisfied that it was a safety net at least, even if she wasn't satisfied that it was a root cause analysis. Ms. Reeves remained concerned and expressed those concerns. And so in January 2017, Ms. Cathy Allen and Paul Shobin started to prepare a brief to go to ESR, which is the laboratory that does, among other things, forensic DNA analysis in New Zealand. And could we have on the screen FSS.0001.0079.3192. And does that document have another page? That's the email where Ms. Sherbin and Ms. Allen discussed the brief. And could we then turn to FSS.0001.0066.9377? Sorry, that's not the right document. We could take that down. That might resolve the redaction issue. So could we have instead, please, operator, FSS.0001.0024.1536. This is the terms of reference or instructions given to ESR. Could we zoom in on the background first, please? So the issue that's identified in the first sentence is accurately identified. That is raised specifically regarding spermatozoa negative acid phosphatase, which is the presumptive test negative sexual assault samples. However, a view of the processing of sex would be appreciated in the spirit of continuing quality improvement. So there's a, and then under the terms of reference, you see that the objective is to examine the processing of sexual assault investigation kits to ascertain its validity as an acceptable scientific process. And that this four dot points of what the ESR review will cover. None of those are email advice of the difference between the ER slide and the DIPLICIS slide. And if we can go back up to the top of the page under background, while it does say there's an indirect reference there indicating spermatozoa negative, but there's nothing in this document that indicates that the negative is on the ER slide when sperm was seen on the DIPLICIS slide or something of that specificity to identify what the problem was that was raised by staff. There's also no reference in here to Project 181 or the workaround put in on the 8th of August. So essentially...
Just pause for a moment so I understand it. ESR, of course, is a recognised world-class facility for DNA testing.
Yes.
And, in fact, we've retained somebody from ESR to give expert advice in this commission, haven't we?
Yes.
And so they're being told that an issue has been raised regarding spermatozoa negative. And the objective of the review under terms of reference is to examine the processing of these samples. And what ESR has been given are the standard operating procedures, relevant ones, and something called a small report titled AP paper. Do we know what that is?
Well, AP is one of the presumptive tests, and it relates to false positives. So that is when a sample would test positive for seminal fluid using acid phosphatase, but it was a false positive.
I see. All right. So, it's not, so it's they're given nothing. They're giving standard documents from the lab, but ESR is not being told that they're missing cases that ought to produce DNA.
That's right.
All right.
That paper was prepared by Valerie Caldwell and Alan McNevin. So it's a effectively like a short journal article.
You mean the AP paper you're talking about?
Yes, that's right.
All right.
I can bring it up on the screen.
No. I just wanted to know what it related to.
Yes. Yes. I'll just put it on the screen briefly just to deal with the start of it. It's FSS.0001.0066.9267. Can we just zoom in under incident, please, and that'll prevent any... Thank you. So on the 8th of November 2016, a negative control gave a false positive AP result when testing was performed using the large filter paper sheets. So obviously a negative control should have no seminal fluid on it because it should have nothing on it. And it tested positive for seminal fluid semen. So that was the issue. So not only... the relevance of this is that not only was the ESR not briefed on the specifics of the issue raised by Amanda Reeve, they were briefed on the specifics of this other issue.
Which was not a problem at the time. At least,
well,
it was not the problem at the time.
Yes. It is a problem to have a negative control come up like that.
Yes.
But presumptive tests are notoriously imperfect. Mm. So it was not the issue that Amanda Reeves was raising. And as we'll see, the ESR report was then linked to Amanda Reeves' issues rather than being linked to
so she, other issues. She was expressing her frustration. We saw one of her emails in which she said she was freaking out, and another in which she said she had tried and tried and tried to have this issue raised. This was at a time when samples were going through the same procedure with the risk that relevant evidence was being missed. And then after that, there's a controversy between her and management staff about her insistence about this matter, I take it.
That's right. So, and the details are not necessary to the commission, but that issue continued to be raised by Ms. Reeves during discussions about her workplace.
Yes. So, in order to put the issue to bed, among other things, ESR is briefed to have a look at sperm microscopy and the sperm identification and testing process, and they're not told about the great issue, the single greatest issue that affects that process that arose in 2016. Instead, they're given the standard documents to have a look at.
That's right.
And yes.
That big issue was the impetus for the project, which was then ongoing, and it's not mentioned there either.
Yes, yes. The one big issue concerning that process was something that they were not told about. So, all right, so that brief goes out to them. Where do we go next?
Yes. So on the 3rd of February 2017, Paul Chauvin wrote to Amanda Reeves about her return to work and told her that there was a scientific investigation ongoing. Put that on the screen. FSS.0001.0067.0539. And can we turn to page 3 of the document? This is the outstanding issues with the scientific process. So it indicates here, this is the letter from Mr. Chauvin to Ms. Reeves, that she'd previously raised issues about the integrity of the scientific tests that were undertaken. And in the third paragraph, he says, I've engaged an external expert to undertake a further scientific investigation and provide a report. And so there is discussion there about how she might return to work while her concern about the scientific process remained. And can we turn to page 4? And there should be a heading options on that page. Available options. So alternative options for duties for Ms. Reeves were identified there, including a temporary role in research or a temporary scientist role working within Pathology Queensland. And we know from the evidence we've heard that there was a research project that Ms. Reeves did when she did return to the workplace. Could I turn then to the 8th of February? So we're in February 2017 now. And to a briefing note that Ms. Allen drafted for the Director General about this Amanda Reeves issue, FSS.0001.0024.0924.
Just could you, before you go there,
yes,
could you go to the previous page of this document? And in the fourth paragraph, if you could highlight that, please. So at a meeting in January 2017, apparently Ms. Reeves had said it wouldn't be appropriate for her to review sexual assault cases as a reporter or give evidence about them because of her ongoing concerns. Do I understand that to mean that having regard to her doubts about the integrity of the testing system up to August 2016, she was not prepared to give opinion evidence as though the process was working well?
I don't believe it was said in such a blanket way. Mm. By that I mean it may be that in a particular case, if she was asked, she would have to express her opinion or her doubts about the process.
Yeah.
It would all depend on the particular case and the particular testing that was done, because there might be tests, there might be cases from before August 2016 where the differential ISA slide was prepared and read, and so then she would have no concerns about that particular case.
So,
but there was a risk.
If she had concerns about the integrity of the testing in cases where semen samples were involved, why would it be inappropriate for her to give evidence in accordance with the truth as she saw it? Why should she be prevented from giving evidence about her doubts about the integrity of the process if she had doubts about the integrity of the process?
Well, I don't say it would have been inappropriate for her to do that, but the Commission hasn't investigated any particular case where that risk arose. As I understand it, this was a discussion about the risk of it.
Yes, what I mean is the risk that's spoken of is that somebody who has, whose expert opinion is that I can't give you an absolute opinion about this because I have no faith in the way the semen samples were processed, would be giving that evidence.
Yes, well.
And if it's true, what's the risk that was being spoken of?
I understand the risk would be that that was not a, while that was her belief,
mm,
that may not have been the true state of affairs, in the sense that at this stage she's been on leave, and so her knowledge of the intricacies of the process may be.
But everybody knew that samples were being missed, and that a workaround, yes, had been put in place that would catch those samples henceforth. So what was the inappropriateness of her giving expert evidence because of her concerns in that respect? I'm not asking you to make... I'm asking you whether we know what... I don't understand that paragraph.
I think the answer is we don't know. We don't know the specific example, the specific concern.
Mm.
And can I say, in just looking at the wording of that, it does say Ms. Reeves accepted, as opposed to
yes,
Ms. Reeves
yes,
said,
right. Yes, but
written in that particular language. And that may not be accepted by Ms. Reeves. And the intent of the Commission, the intent of counsel assisting is to not send necessarily into the.
No, the rights and wrongs of the rights and wrongs of human resources issues, that is, you know, staffing issues, are peripheral, although some of them are important, of course. But the story so far is that something's going wrong with microscopy when looking for semen. And everybody knows that as a consequence, some samples might have been missed. And it took 8 months, longer actually, from the time when the first issue first raised in 2015, according to the evidence you've opened, for anything to be done about it. So I think we've agreed that about 400 samples might have been missed. Anyway, not insignificant number of samples. The forensic significance of which is unknown. And if an expert from FSS goes to court and gives evidence in accordance with those truths, unless there was something else that was concerning Ms. Reeves that made her an inappropriate expert witness for FSS to offer, I don't see why telling the truth about that. But anyway, you don't know the answer yet, so we'll see what happens.
Thank you. The risk is described by Ms. Allen in this draft briefing note, at least how she perceives it. So FSS.0001.
Yes.
0024.0924. Can we turn down to 1.8 and 1.9 at the bottom of the page there? So there's a sort of a public interest disclosure. 1.9 says that risk mitigation steps have been introduced and a scientific review of those kits has been commenced. So it indicates what the review is. And can we turn to the next page, please? In paragraphs 2 to 5, it indicates that while Ms. Reeves has obtained a clearance to return to duties, an offer of alternative employment has been made.
The last sentence of paragraph 2 suggests she had not agreed it would be inappropriate for her to give evidence. All right, number 3 is what you're talking about.
Yes.
So well, I don't understand that at all. Anyway, it'll become clear. Don't hold up things for that reason.
Well, that is the risk, as I say, as drafted by Ms. Allen, as I understand it.
If Ms. Reeves were to provide evidence that processing of sexual assault evidence was inadequate, the community would lose faith in the scientific work.
That's right. That's the risk that's been identified.
And the inadequacy we're speaking of is that period during which samples were probably being missed. There's no other inadequacy that we're talking about, is there?
No, that's right. But perhaps at this stage it may be, and I don't know, but it may be that different people in the laboratory had different views about how much might have been missed, if anything. So whether those examples that were coming up in late 2015, early 2016 were an anomaly as opposed to a systemic issue. So Mr. McNevin says, for example, that he is not necessarily convinced there was a systemic issue as opposed to a number of anomalies which do exist in forensic DNA analysis.
I see. All right.
Right.
That is to say, Ms. Reeves's concerns might have been unreasonably they might have been overblown. She might have been overly concerned about something that didn't warrant that degree of concern.
That's right.
And therefore, you can't have those concerns being aired when they weren't justified in the way she saw it. Is that what you're saying?
That's right, because the science is not perfect. So missing a couple of samples, a very small amount may not be outside, may not indicate a greater problem with the whole process. That's right. So there's a difference of opinion about that. And so if Ms. Reeves' concern was an unreasonable one, then it would be not be a good outcome for that evidence to be given and then call into question what is otherwise an acceptable process. But that's what the evidence will bring out, whether that risk.
Yes, I understand. We'll see how it comes out.
And how significant it was. Mr. Cochrane, I should say, holds the view that there were sufficient examples from what he's seen that there should have been an OQI raised or an adverse event raised, and there should have been some urgent attention paid to this. So in his view, there was a sufficient risk to do something quickly. Right. Can we move then to March of 2017? Mr. Shoburn wrote to Crown Law about Amanda Reeves. And this is a attachment to Miss Allen's statement. WIT.0019.0016.0877. And that it's that middle email. If you do want to zoom in, we can. Thank you. In that first paragraph, Mr. Shoburn says that Amanda is currently removed from the reporting section and has been placed into a project role outside of DNA, pending outcome of the HR review and also scientific review of the process she's challenging.
I see. So. The basis for the ESR review was that they were reviewing the scientific process that gave rise to Ms. Reeves's concerns.
I'm sorry,
The basis for the ESR review was that it would be examining whether Ms. Reeves was justified in the concerns that she was expressing, and that if called upon to give evidence, she might have occasion to voice in open court.
And that's how it is portrayed by Mr. Shoburn in this email.
Yes.
That the ESR review has some responsive feature to her concerns.
Yes.
But as we looked at the terms of reference.
It didn't.
It didn't.
Mm.
It looked at the process that she was concerned about, but it didn't tell them this is the thing that we've seen.
Well, it looked at the process that was being used that actually gave rise to the problems.
That's right.
Hmm.
And so without the factual circumstance of having seen the sperm on the different lysis slide but not on the ER slide, there's no indication, it's perhaps not apparent to ESR what the issue is. And Mr. Cochrane says that about the process before the workaround, the process at the start of 2016. He says that process is fine if it works. And so if it's not working, then there's some problem. And that's what these particular examples show. But ESR weren't told the particular examples or the particular problem.
Yeah, they weren't told that the process they were being asked to look at wasn't working.
That's right, or at least had some examples of that. That's right.
Well, it's got to work in every case. Variability in measurement and the occasional failure might be inherent in any scientific process, but that's not what Mr. Papier and Ms. Wilson were talking about when they were raising these issues in their emails.
That's right, because they'd started to see a few. That's right.
And that's not what management thought was happening, because they generated at least a project and a workaround, two things to deal with it. So this wasn't scientific variability. This was a failure that required action, and action was being taken, slow that it might have been, but action was being taken.
Yes, that may not be wholly agreed across the laboratory. For example, Mr. McNevin says, of course you would start a project and gather data, but the purpose of that is to determine whether there's a problem. So he wasn't necessarily accepting that there was a problem when he started to look at it.
I see. All right.
But, yes, we'll hear more from these people about that. All right. Can we turn then to WIT.0019.0016.0746? And could we just turn to the page before that? I'm sorry. So this is an email from Ms. Allen to lawyers at Clayton Utes who were briefed to give advice about Ms. Reeves. And if we can turn back to the second page, thank you. in the about the fourth last paragraph, I've attached the Australian and New Zealand Forensic Science Society, that paragraph there.
Who's Ms. Allen writing to?
To a lawyer at Clayton Oates.
Right, at Clayton Oates, yes,
all right. Briefed to give advice about the Amanda Reeves situation.
Mm. What's the date of this?
9 March 2017.
Right.
So Ms. Reeves discusses about, indicates what she says might be a breach of a code by Ms. Reeves, but that's not the present purpose of this paragraph. Rather, it says what ESR said, given that ESR have said we have a sound scientific procedure. If Amanda were to not accept this, then perhaps she's not being objective. Again, suggesting that there's a connection between what ESR were asked to do and what Ms. Reeves has raised.
Mm.
Could we turn then to when the report is obtained from ESR, or at least the first it's a draft, but it becomes the final report. That was in late March 2017. So could we look at FSS.0001.0079.3295? And in short compass, the report found that there was no concern about that process. So this is the email attaching the report from ESR and sending it to these people, from Mr. Shobin, importantly, Ms. Franklin, Jade. Jade Franklin is a HR person within Queensland Health. So then that's the 23rd of March. Can we then turn to FSS.0001.0079.3297? So in the context of everything that's gone before, it's clear that at least some people have the impression that this relates to Amanda Reeves' concern. And can we turn to that email right at the bottom of the page there from Jade Franklin? And Commissioner, you see in the third sentence Jade writes is it a problem that the report does not comment on the fact that Ms. Reeves is wrong in her thinking? In terms that false negative issue Ms. Reeves discusses is not an issue at all.
What does that mean?
Well, it's just not in the report because weren't asked to consider that issue. So there's just nothing about it. So Jade Franklin identifies that. And then can we turn to FSS.0001.0079.3299? Can we this is the response from I'm sorry, could we scroll down onto the next page, please? So sorry, back to page one. So sorry, I don't think that's the right. In any case, I'll just, Ms. Allen responds and does not identify exactly, does not say anything in response to that point made by Jay Franklin about whether it's a problem that the report doesn't comment on Ms. Reeves' issue. All right, can we then turn to advice given by Clayton Utes in late March 2017? It's FSS.0019.0021.0001. And again, all these documents, while they have lots of material about Ms. Reeves, are really directed by counsel assisting to this ESR report issue. So could we turn to page 6 of that document? And could we zoom in on the ESR scientific report part, please? Thank you. So Clayton Utes indicate they've reviewed the ESR scientific report. Whilst it appears to support HSQ's current testing process, it is not clear whether it also considered the testing process in place prior to August 2016. In fact, Mr. Cochrane's view is that it was the previous process that they considered because the workaround wasn't advised to them and the standard operating procedure hadn't been amended by the time it was sent to them. But in any case, Clayton Ute said here, in our view, this needs to be clear if it is to be presented to Mr. Reeves.
So that relates to the first paragraph on that page, namely that Ms. Reeves was insisting on going back to her original job, and the only reason that's put forward as why she can't go back to her original job is that it was said to be inappropriate for her to be involved in assessing sexual assault case samples because of a risk. And that was based upon a rejection of her concern about how such samples were tested until August 2016. And Clayton Utz are being told that the ESR report has addressed the mode of testing by the lab in absolute terms and has given it a big tick.
Yes, that's right.
But unknown to Clayton Utz, Clayton Utz then pick up in paragraph 7 that the ESR report doesn't actually address what Ms. Reeves is concerned about.
That's right, not the specific issue.
All right, so where do we go then?
So then in April 2017, Mr. Chauvin met with Amanda Reeves and her legal representatives, and it was made clear that a willingness to abide by the outcome of the ESR review was required of Ms. Reeves in order for her to be permitted to return to her substantive role, although there's no evidence that she was ever given a full copy of the report or of the terms of reference. There's a number of other further HR-related matters involving Ms. Reeves' position. And in September of 2017, there was a letter written about her return to her substantive position. Can we turn to FSS.01's? I'm sorry, I don't think we need that document. So there was an email about her actual return. And she did return for some short period to her substantive position before eventually leaving the laboratory. In the meantime, the Project 181 continued, and Mr. Cochrane has, while I will tender the particular documents that form part of Project 181, Mr. Cochrane has summarised them in his report, and so it's convenient to look at it that way. EXP.0004.0001.0002. I could just zoom in on this table. You can see that there's a number of parts of this project. Part one looked into it. The current microscopy method sensitivity, that is how good it was at picking up spermatozoa, including the presumptive tests. Then in part two, there was an alternate microscopy preparation method using a spin basket. Can we then turn over onto the next page? Thank you. Part three, which was done in May 2018, and these dates are the dates of commencement. They looked at the viability of varying ER sample suspension volumes to look at for presumptive screening. Part four, optimization of ER suspension incubation conditions. Part five, effects of different variables on AP performance. That's one of the presumptive tests. Part six, further attempts to optimize the performance, reducing suspension volume. Part seven, different substrates. And semen donor source, and at the end there was a new modified protocol implemented about the use of the presumptive test. So you can see, Commissioner, that none of those parts are a root cause analysis of why the ER slides weren't showing sperm in those particular examples or more broadly, as was identified by the scientists. And to assist with a...
So just to go back to the commencement, which was in August 2016, is that Project 181 we're talking about, yeah?
Yes.
Yes, on page... 004, 001, 002. Yeah. So the project begins in August. So if we look at the entry for April 2017, they're trying an alternate preparation method for microscopy, correct?
Yes.
In May 2018, they're exploring the viability of varying suspension volumes. In short, upon the launch of the project, they are trying different methods because on the basis that the methods outlined in the standing operating procedure were giving rise to problems.
Yes, although I'm not sure that was accepted by Mr. McNevin, but he was trying to optimise the procedure in any case. Whether there was a problem or not, his aim was to optimise the procedure.
Yes, but the trouble is that ESR were being given the standard operating procedures in print without being told anything about this.
That's right. And that perhaps is only a problem depending on how you use the ESR report.
Well,
if you use it for what it is, then...
Well, it's... that raises the purpose. That raises the question, what is the purpose of getting a report from ESR looking at the printed standard operating procedures and asking for an opinion about them, when in the background you have scientists complaining about the viability of the system and a scientist engaging in a project trying to improve the system for some reason or other? Anyway, we'll find all that out in due course. Where do we go next then, Ms. Hedge?
Deal briefly, that's effectively the end of the history of the matter, and you would have seen that the end of the project is in 2020. So in total, the project went for about four years. That is another issue that the Commission engaged Mr. Clint Cochrane to consider, and he considered that that also was a long period of time and that the matter should have been able to be done more quickly. Can I briefly open Mr. Cochrane's evidence? He'll give evidence after the opening, perhaps after the morning break. He concluded that the workflow before the issue was identified...
Well, do you want to have the break now before getting on to Mr. Cochrane's report?
I'll only be a few minutes.
All right, go ahead.
I'm just opening it.
And yes, go ahead.
He concluded that the workflow, as I said, was best practice as long as each of the processes was working. But in his view, the number of examples of sperm not being found on the ER slides but found on the diff lysis slide warranted an OQI or an adverse event. After that, though, performing a project was not concerning to Mr. Cochrane. There was two delays in the case. One's that first delay that we've discussed between late 2015 and August 2016, and the other's the whole of the project, and both were concerning to him. In terms of the ESR report, he notes that they were not advised of the particular issue. His view, and perhaps most importantly, moving forward from here, is that by 2020, using YSTR processes was best practice in Australia, not using sperm microscopy at all. So in his view, by the time this project finished, what the laboratory should have been focused on was not optimising sperm microscopy, but obtaining YSTR
now,
capability.
The YSTR process is a process that concentrates attention by various chemical means upon the male content of any sample, the male DNA content of any sample.
Yes, that's right. That's, separates the male DNA.
Yes.
And yeah. It looks at only that.
So that if you have a huge amount of female DNA and a tiny amount of male DNA, whereas the normal process would give prominence to the female component, and I think the expression is it might swamp the male component because it's so small by comparison, the YSTR method concentrates solely upon the male component of the DNA, if it's there, and then the male content component can be looked at without the female component having an influence upon the profile that results. So you get a cleaner picture of the male DNA, whatever it's worth.
That's right. And by 2020, Mr. Cochrane's view is that was best practice in Australia.
And did FSS have that capacity to do work in that way?
They did not, and they still do not. There is a project ongoing, which Dr. Kodgios and Ms. Baker, the experts looking at the current operation of the lab, can speak about in the week after next.
Mm.
So there is a project ongoing, but the lab has not yet been able to validate YSTR, so it still lacks that capability. In terms of witnesses that relate to this topic, Mr. McNevin will be called after Mr. Cochrane. It may be that he is the only other witness called to give oral evidence and that others will simply be dealt with by their written statements, other than, of course, Mr. Howes, Ms. Allen, Mr. Chauvin, who will be called in the next 2 weeks or so.
Yes.
Now is a suitable time for the morning adjournment. We can yes. set up a video link for Mr. Cochrane.
Yes. It's 25 past 11. Shall we resume at 11:45?
Thank you.
All rise.